What if our most profound connections arrive when we least expect them? In these precious days, Anne Patchett transforms ordinary moments into revelations about what truly matters. Through crystalline prose that feels like an intimate conversation with a wise friend, she explores how fleeting encounters can reshape our understanding of life itself. When Patchett first meets Suki Raphael, personal assistant to Tom Hanks, neither woman could have predicted their paths would intertwine during a global pandemic, or that their friendship would become a lifeline as Suki battled pancreatic cancer. What begins as a casual invitation for Suki to stay while participating in a clinical trial evolves into something sacred. Two women from different worlds discovering each other's depths during borrowed time. This unexpected friendship becomes the centerpiece of a collection that examines how we find meaning in life's unpredictable turns, whether through relationships, creative pursuits, or confronting our own mortality. Growing up, I learned different lessons from three fathers. My biological father, a police officer from the Depression era, collected unread classics and discouraged my writing dreams, only proudly admitting, "Good thing she never listens to me," after my success. My stepfather, Mike, a neurosurgeon who flew helicopters and lectured globally, believed in my writing completely. "Six kids," he'd say, "and you're the only one I'll never have to worry about." Despite his achievements, he harbored his own writing dreams, hoping future generations would read works by Michael Glasscock. Daryl, my mother's third husband, offered simple acceptance without expectation. He saw people for who they were, finding equal wonder in everyone. Each shaped me differently. My father's resistance taught independence, Mike's support built confidence, while his poor novels showed what to avoid, and Daryl demonstrated unconditional acceptance. Beyond these lessons were precious moments: kitchen dances with my father, Mike's gift of a piglet after Charlotte's Web, and the comfort of Daryl's welcoming table. At 17, during my freshman year at Sarah Lawrence, I cooked my first Thanksgiving dinner alone. I invited five other stranded students, borrowed the joy of cooking, and bought supplies with my savings from the A&P. In that cold dorm, I attempted everything from scratch: pie crust with frozen butter, yeast rolls, and my first turkey. I even borrowed silverware from the cafeteria for my guests. What strikes me now is my youthful confidence. Despite minimal cooking experience, I saved my one phone call home to share the success after dinner. The meal wasn't perfect, burned rolls and undercooked vegetables, but we didn't mind. We huddled by the open oven for warmth, drank wine, and played at being adults, strays recreating home traditions. That day showed me how books could be partners in self-discovery. The joy of cooking revealed hidden capabilities, proving how careful reading led to successful results. Inspired by a friend's no shopping year, I committed to giving up non-essential purchases for a year in 2017 after noticing my habit of mindless online shopping. My rules allowed necessities, travel, meals, and books, but excluded clothing, shoes, and unnecessary items. The experiment's greatest gift was mental clarity. Without the constant drive to acquire more, I discovered the abundance I already possessed. Packing became simpler, and I felt genuine appreciation for gifts. When the year ended, my shopping impulse had disappeared, like a former smoker's cravings. Life gained sharper focus without the constant pursuit of new things. While recognizing the privilege of choosing this path, the experience helped distinguish wants from needs and fostered greater generosity toward others. At an important book festival, a successful author claimed, "You can't be a real writer if you don't have children, because until you have children, you don't know what it means to love." The exchange ended in silence. Growing up at my convent school, I saw women without children living fulfilled lives, showing me that happiness takes different forms. When my friend Deborah struggled with her decision about children, I explained my certainty through a metaphor. "People keep insisting I search for car keys in an empty drawer. There's never anything in the drawer, and there's never going to be." Deborah replied, "That must be really nice to know." Having a dog or writing a book isn't the same as having a child. I know this. I'm not trying to fill a void from not having children, because there is no void. I love these parts of my life for what they are. When Carl and I married at 41, people said, "How wonderful, you can still have a child." We were perfectly matched. I didn't want children, and he already had them. My family supported my decision, though their reasons remained unclear. My first writing mentor was Snoopy from Peanuts. As an introverted child in Paradise, California, I devoured these comics during summers at my grandparents', memorizing every page. Snoopy wasn't just Charlie Brown's cool companion. He was a writer I wanted to emulate. Snoopy masterfully inhabited multiple worlds: a WWI flying ace, Joe Cool, a figure skater, astronaut, and suburban pet with a sophisticated doghouse. Most importantly, he was a writer who sat at his typewriter, famously beginning stories with, "It was a dark and stormy night." Through him, I absorbed fundamental writing lessons, from critical reading and imagination to handling rejection and finding joy in crafting perfect sentences. He demonstrated that writers don't need ideal settings, that failure is part of the journey, and that the work itself matters most. Later, Eudora Welty became another mentor through A Visit of Charity. First read in seventh grade, this story revealed new layers with each reading, demonstrating how great literature evolves with the reader. Her collected works showcase an impressive range, from comedy to horror, family drama to mythology, all unified by compassionate truth. When Suki Raphael came to Nashville for a book event where I was interviewing Tom Hanks, she had recently received a pancreatic cancer diagnosis and was considering treatment at Vanderbilt. I offered our guest house, and as the pandemic hit, she moved in for treatment. What began as temporary housing evolved into a profound friendship. We established daily routines, morning walks with my dog Sparky, afternoons of painting and writing, and shared dinners. Suki, who had spent 20 years as Tom Hanks' assistant coordinating global film shoots, was finally pursuing her postponed passion for painting while facing mortality. Our bond deepened through shared experiences, from a memorable mushroom journey to meaningful conversations about art. When Suki returned to California, her cancer markers had improved from 2100 to 170. At her final gallery show, she wore her self-painted black velvet coat with embroidered peonies, finally receiving the spotlight she deserved after years of witnessing others' acclaim.